We are a week away from training camp opening, which means that we are officially entering redraft season. And today we're going to break down 12 rookies that your league mates are overlooking in fantasy football. Essentially, this video is going to be catered towards rookies that we expect to get out to hot starts in their NFL career. There's going to be some dynasty implications here as well, but generally this is going to be done from a redraft frame of mind. Guys that we think have some immediate opportunity on the table. Danny, before we get into it, I just wanted to quickly highlight some of the best rookie picks in redraft since 2017. The best rookie pick ever in that span, Alvin Kamara, 26.4% win rate. James Robinson, basically undrafted, 22.7% win rate. Bucky Irving a couple of years ago, JT as a rookie. Kareem Hunt his rookie season, Puka Nacua his rookie season, Sam Laporta his rookie season. That this list doesn't even include, these are the top 30 win rates overall, seven of them being rookies. This list doesn't even include Jefferson's rookie season, Chase's rookie season, Bauer's rookie season, Achan's rookie season, BTJ, Ladd, Saquon, Chubb, and Miles Sanders, to name a few more. So if we kind of just think about the framework for some of these rookies, a lot of the time it is opportunity-based. There's opportunity in front of you to start if you're a receiver, to get touches if you're a running back, to be a starting quarterback, to be a starting tight end. So I do want to just frame that as our first piece of context of the rookies that we're going to talk about today, is that, yeah, you're going to need some opportunity in front of you.
100%. And ultimately, there's a different caliber of hit, because we talk about just the overall win rate, but when we're talking about some of these deeper names that are going in the 120s and beyond, from a best ball perspective, it's, can they hit my lineup and how many times they can hit my lineup? And I feel like that's about the expectation I have for a lot of these guys. Do I think they're going to be, you know, top 30 wide receivers or top 20 running backs? Probably not necessarily, but can they be guys that down the stretch give you four or five usable weeks? I do think that's in the range of outcomes.
Yeah, let's start it off with a guy that, how about I talk about him? Because you talk about him a lot. Danny is the highest on the site on Carnell Tate, probably the highest on the planet on Carnell Tate. He's a very good prospect, you know, in the prospect model. If I go over to it, in the wide receiver prospect model, he's the 10th best wide receiver prospect since the year 2016. So we're talking about a very high-end wide receiver prospect. Now goes to a situation, based on what I just said, where he has a lot of opportunity in front of him. The Tennessee Titans have Wandale Robinson, who's a good target earner, 140 targets last season. Calvin Ridley, who's appears to be kind of beyond his best playing days at this point in time. And if you believe in Carnell Tate, the prospect, the way that Danny believes in Carnell Tate, many others do, you like the opportunity, you like the ability to get on the field right away, especially the archetype of player he is. He's a route runner. He's the type of player that can get on the field and probably produce right away. Upside with Brian Daboll, Cam Ward ascending as a player, you also have the potential for this offense to be a lot more pass heavy, given that the offensive line is developed a little bit. And, you know, kind of have you, as you have listed here, Brian Daboll is a pass heavy coach and up tempo coach as well.
Exactly. I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself. I am clearly the highest on the site. I'd be willing to take this guy at the end of the fourth round if I had to. The fact that his ADP isn't in the top 40, when we saw Tedrone McMillan fall inside the top 40, we saw a lot of comparative rookies fall inside the top 40 in the past. To me, it's just an elite blend, like you said, opportunity, talent, and potential ascending offense.
Yeah, Danny has him at 45 in his rankings. I have him at 61 in mine, which is not really, you know, I am lower than the expert consensus site ranking on him, but generally I think this is a guy that in the mid rounds, in the fifth, in the sixth round, you should be taking shots on because of what the upside case is. I think you outlined it perfectly there. Tedrone McMillan was a 4-5 turn pick last year, and there is really no difference between Carnell Tate and Tedrone McMillan, the prospect. When you look at their prospect model grades, they're very similar. Tedrone McMillan, an 89.68%, which is number five all time since 2016. Carnell Tate, 85.79%. Both wide receiver one upside prospects, both comparable to the likes of Drake London, Romo Dunze, AJ Brown, you know, Devontae Smith, T. Higgins, Justin Jefferson, those types of players. So I think when you look at Carnell Tate, you just basically need to rely on either Cam Ward or Brian Daboll making the offense an ascending offense, making the offense a you know, pass friendly offense, and Carnell Tate can do the rest if you think he's the prospect that, you know, he can be. And the smash level potential for Carnell Tate is that of a, you know, super high win rate player. Like he could be, you know, the 2021 Jamar Chase, the 2020 Justin Jefferson, the 2024 Ladd McConkey or Brian Thomas Jr.
Yeah. And it all stems back on archetypal drafting. Like in your first four rounds, if you go with, you know, safer veteran options, like this is the type of rookie where if he's your wide receiver two or your wide receiver three, he can absolutely be a legitimate 15 plus, 16 plus point per game player. Maybe not out of the gates, but absolutely down the stretch. And to be honest, I also just think the slow start nature that people have for Tate. You look at the target competition outside of Wandale Robinson. Unless you're a really big gun or helm guy, why can't he profile into 140, 150 targets?
Yeah, my concern with him being that he's an X receiver archetype, I do want to see him moved around the formation. But to the Brian Daboll of it all, you know, Malik Nabers had a monster season, his rookie season. So as long as Carnell Tate can come out and be the number one right away, the way that Malik was in his first training camp, like in training camp of July of his rookie season,
we knew.
Everyone's like, Malik's a stud. He's going to be an absolute baller.
So we've already heard glowing reports out of camp, like thus far, like the rookie mini camp. But who knows if training camp happens and we are hearing those reports, like this is also just a player from a CLV perspective. If you can get him close to pick 60 right now, maybe by the time the season opens, his ADP is closer to 51, 52.
Yeah, absolutely. And we would be remiss if we didn't mention that Underdog's a big part of this video because, you know, we're trying to get shares of these players right away. And Underdog, you can draft teams right now. You don't have to be waiting in for until your home league drafts open up. And of course, we also have a best ball overlay on the site that you guys can use, get access to. And of course, anybody who uses our promo code FSE can play $5 and get $50 in bonus entries right now. And they can get both our dynasty and redraft draft guides for free when they make their first play on the site. All you have to do is sign up with our promo code. And within 24 hours after you enter your first draft, you will be emailed our draft guides there. So let's talk about Jadarian Price, who was the second running back off the board from his own team and also in general in the NFL draft. Jadarian Price heads to the Seattle Seahawks. Right now, the expert average for us on the site is 54. So we're talking about a guy kind of around that 4-5 turn area of draft. On Underdog, he's going off the board at 63.2. And in home league ADP right now, he's going much lower than that. We'll see how much that corrects itself by the time we get to actual drafts. But let's talk about Jadarian Price here.
Yeah, it's very simple with Jadarian Price. And people are going to point to, well, George Helani's working ahead of him in training camp. And George Helani was on the team last year. George Helani is not stopping Jadarian Price. And if he does, we learned a lot from a dynasty perspective. There's a reason why they drafted him in the first round. There's a reason why we were higher on the film of Jadarian Price. If Jadarian Price truthfully cannot beat out George Helani, cannot beat out Emmanuel Wilson, because, oh, by the way, Adam Schefter literally confirmed the team doesn't expect Zach Charbonnet to be a big-time contributor till at least halfway point of the season. Jadarian Price, if he's getting the opportunity to be a legitimate at least 1A back, 17-plus opportunity per game type of back in the early onset of the year, man, he could just wrestle this job straight up.
Yeah, and we have a new feature on the site, which is cross-platform ADP for every platform that we support. Yep. So you can see where he's going on Sleeper, ESPN, Yahoo, Underdog, CBS, and FFPC. Sleeper is just on Mars with the 132 overall ADP.
Not updated, generally, surely.
You can see that he's somewhere in the like sixth round of most of the other redraft platforms, including Underdog, which is obviously the sharpest ADP out there because it's paid drafts going on all the time. So I think, yeah, like the George Helani, the Emmanuel Wilson, the Zach Charbonnet concerns aside, Jadarian Price, if we just look at what I said at the beginning of the video, who profiles to be on the field right away, getting opportunity, it's Jadarian Price. George Helani is a minor obstacle for him to overcome probably by second week of training camp.
Yeah, like George Helani, I'm sorry, did you care about him last year? Did you pick him up off waivers last year? Did you have any expectations for him last year? The team told you what they wanted to do. They didn't need to take a running back in the first round. They said, hey, you know what? Walker's gone. We need a starting running back. That was their thought process. So if you think George Helani's going to work ahead of him, I don't even know what to tell you. Just don't draft fantasy football.
Yeah, and again, I think sometimes fantasy football isn't hard, too. Like, yes, Jadarian Price, the prospect, if I look at his prospect tab, like, he obviously had a lot of holes and warts in his prospect profile, but he had a good reason for that. It was Jeremiah Love being a stud that he was. The film on Jadarian Price is quite solid. And again, you got a first-round running back playing for the Super Bowl champions where Clint Kubiak, the issue that people had with him was that he wasn't using Kenneth Walker as a full-fledged bell cow and all that kind of stuff. One, Charbonnet is not going to be back on the field maybe all season based on what my conversation was with Dr. James Ferretti. And two, Clint Kubiak used Kenneth Walker in that facet because that's kind of Kenneth Walker's Achilles heel. He is a little bit more of a boomer bust runner. He has some holes to his game. Jadarian Price was a lot more refined coming out of Notre Dame, and I do think he can handle 18 to 20 touches. Yes, George Helani and whoever else is going to mix in, but I think by the end of the season, we could be talking about a league winner for sure.
I'm so glad you mentioned that because literally one of the best pros when we both watched Jadarian Price's film was his decisiveness and his overall vision of the field. He was one of the most intangibly smart running backs in terms of his just raw instincts at the position. And you wouldn't typically see that for a guy that was working behind Jeremiah Love. But I'm telling you, man, in those instances where he got the extra burn, where he was relied upon in tough down and distance situations, you know, the third and threes, those crucial plays. Jadarian Price was never missing.
Yeah, I'm actually really impressed. It's just hard to see a guy that doesn't have a whole lot of experience being as, like you said, refined from a in between the tackle standpoint as he was. And I actually can pull this up because it's from our draft guide, which of course we did earlier in the offseason from a dynasty angle, but you can see that the strengths and the grades that you and I had for him on instincts and vision were perfect. Like he was so, like, he looked like Nick Chubb out there, man. Like, he knew exactly where he was going anytime the ball was snapped, anytime he got the opportunity to get the touches there. So again, it's difficult because he didn't always have the full workload, but it is intriguing that Jadarian Price is going to have a full workload, or at least have a chance of a full workload in the NFL right away.
And just look at those two comps that we had, both guys that were, yeah, you know, I mean, Sony Michel was a late first rounder, J.K. Dobbins more of like an early to mid second rounder, but both of them just showed flashes as pure runners and both completely, you know, beat where their ADPs were. Jadarian Price, I would argue, has more of an opportunity right off the get-go because he didn't have to compete with Mark Ingram for touches. He didn't have to compete with the full array of backs that, you know, at the time, what, the 2017 Patriots, they were relying upon three or four guys in that backfield. Obviously, Michel established himself as that pure between the tackles guy, but I would argue the competition of George Halani, Emmanuel Wilson, and, you know, an ACL-less Zach Charbonnet is much less than those guys had to fend off.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So let's keep it rolling here. We have the next guy on the list, which is Mekhi Lemon, who I believe is one of my like two or three highest drafted receivers at this point in time. And a large part of it is like what I think of the Philadelphia Eagles. And a larger part of it is what I think of Mekhi Lemon. Because as you could see here, number eight in the prospect model, he was my wide receiver one pre-draft. You can see on the player card there. The comp being, you know, your Jackson Smith and Jigba, Amon-Ra St. Brown archetype, who, if you think about like how Puka Nacua hit his rookie season, it was being like today's NFL PPR wide receiver, which is exactly the type of player Mekhi Lemon is. And from a projection standpoint, my thought process on the Philadelphia Eagles is Sean Mannion is coming in, Kevin Petullo is gone, and Jalen Hurts, when asked to throw over the middle of the field, which is where Mekhi Lemon's primarily going to operate, I saw Ron and Ryan Heath bring this up on the show that they did together. He's actually been very efficient in that regard. It's just that he wasn't asked to do that very much, and I think that people are going to overthink Mekhi Lemon the way that they did Garrett Wilson and Justin Jefferson and those type of guys their rookie seasons, which is, oh, Philadelphia Eagles run heavy offense, don't really care. The reason Jefferson and Garrett Wilson hit as rookies is because they were baller prospects. And Mekhi Lemon quite literally is exactly comparable to both players. Like, he is 86.44% in the prospect model. That is higher than Justin Jefferson. That is higher than Garrett Wilson. He is the same archetype of player as Garrett, especially, who's going to be more of your Z receiver operating sometimes in the slot. And Devontae Smith is also, you know, in a role that he's not familiar with yet, being the number one receiver.
Well, it's funny too. You go back to that prospect chart because literally the guy he's ahead of directly is his teammate. Devontae Smith at 11, Mekhi Lemon at 8. So realistically, even though we are optimistic on Devontae Smith, we do think he was, let's just say, one of the most overqualified number two wide receivers we've seen in the past. Like, I do think he could be a number one wide receiver. But when you're just taking the raw prospect profiles of both of them, like, yeah, Devontae Smith won his Heisman, but I also think the age-adjusted projection of Mekhi Lemon was more impressive. So in terms of just pure raw prospect profiles, if you put both of them in the same draft class, you'd probably say it's about a 50-50, one or the other ends up being the one there.
Yeah, Lemon would have been the analytics guy and Smith would have been the film guy reasonably if they were in the same class.
Like, is it all that different, in my opinion, to what Chris Olave versus Jordan Tyson's dealing with right now? And yet Tyson goes so much earlier than where Mekhi Lemon currently is at in ADP.
Yeah, and I mean, you wouldn't draft Mekhi Lemon on the same team as Devontae Smith, potentially. No. Like, you take your investment, take your swing on one of the guys. You're if you take Mekhi Lemon, maybe you're inherently betting that Devontae Smith can't be a full-fledged number one or something like that. Or maybe you're betting on the Eagles offense in general and it not mattering.
Yeah. Again, I have more question marks with the Eagles offense, but the nuts and bolts are we still don't know if Devontae Smith can be a 30%, you know, 28% alpha true end number one target player. And Mekhi Lemon has the prospect profile to indicate that he can grow into that. What if by week 8, week 9, it's a 23-25 split and actually ends up favoring Mekhi? Like, who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about these Browns receivers, because both of them, and again, very similar to what I just said with Mekhi Lemon, you maybe don't want to draft both Denzel Boston and Casey Concepcion on the same team, because I do think that they probably hit in spite of the other missing. But The Cleveland Browns had a 20-year-old tight end from Bowling Green lead them in targets last year and in yards and whatnot. So the redraft projection, I guess you'll have to sell me on this offense giving a lot of, you know, point production to one of these guys. But I think it's the same thing I said at the beginning of the video, where if one of these guys is a dude, if they're a top-tier receiver, a, you know, top 30 offensive rookie of the year type candidate player, they can come out right away and be an alpha on this team, because there is really nobody that is going to scare you if they're, you know, Casey Concepcion's comp coming out of school for us was, you know, kind of like a Chris Olave, Emmanuel Sanders. Denzel Boston on the higher end can be more of like a Michael Pittman, Jaden Higgins, whichever one you kind of wanted to tether yourself to. Concepcion more of like a top 100 or so pick, a top 120 pick, and then Boston more of a mid-round 13th, 14th rounder.
Yeah, the way I look at it is in terms of like prospect profiles, kind of think of like Zay Flowers and Michael Pittman, the prospects, both got drafted to Cleveland. And their biggest competition for wide receiver targets is a guy that kind of feels like he's falling out of favor with the team. Because Jerry Jeudy, obviously 2 years ago, had a big stretch. But there's a reason why this new regime went out and made two of their first three picks offensive weapons. They want to increase the passing validity of this team. They were the, what, single worst passing offense in the entire league last year. You bring in Todd Monken. You bring in two established receivers that were, you know, very high-end prospects, in my opinion. And ultimately, if they're able to beat out Jeudy for snaps, again, it might be a process. It might be, well, Jeudy, he's the veteran. Weeks 1, 2, 3, he's the thorn on their side. By week 4, I do think there's the opportunity for both these guys to establish themselves. Denzel Boston as, you know, the big slot X archetype, obviously with Casey Concepcion being that Z, you know, more vertical slot archetype. I do think just the heuristic of trusting talented rookies with volume opportunities picked outside of the top 115, those just tend to be some of the better clicks on the board.
Yeah, and you could obviously talk yourself into Omar Cooper for the same reason as well, just because, you know, you get drafted in the first round, both of these guys drafted in the top 40 picks, Concepcion in the first round, Boston at the early second round portion, that generally are just, you know, when you're, especially in redraft, like from best ball, you can argue, yeah, oh, what if they're zeros? What if they don't hit your lineup very often, et cetera. From a redraft standpoint, Denzel Boston going around 13 or whatever, like if he sucks, you drop him and you pick up somebody on the waiver wire. Like there's absolutely no, you know, issues if he doesn't work out. Like you just, you wasted a 13th round pick, whatever.
Exactly. And I think you are right. It's unlikely that both of them just completely smash their ADP.
Like, unless you think Shadur's going to be really good. That would be the only way. Or Watson is going to be really good.
Like maybe the only scenario too would be like Fandom missed time and it's just such a concentrated target share between the top two options. Like that would probably be the out. But even if it's just one of them emerging, like the one that emerges is immediately going to be a top two weapon in their offense. Like that being picked out of the top 110 in ADP alone is worth the click.
Yeah. And what if Todd Monken schemes this thing? Like Todd Monken, people are going, okay, well, he's like the Ravens offensive coordinator last year. They weren't very pass heavy. It's like, you remember him in Tampa Bay, right? Like they just threw the ball like crazy. Like it's very possible without Myles Garrett now that they take a step back on defense and they actually have to throw the ball quite a bit.
Well, the last time he was in Cleveland, wasn't that Baker's best season as a pro?
I think that was Baker's second best, Freddie Kitchens year, wasn't it?
Oh, was it? Okay. I just know he was there for 1 year with Baker Mayfield, and I'm pretty sure that was one of his better years.
It was 2019. Yeah, it was the Freddie Kitchens year.
Gotcha. Okay.
At Tampa Bay's 2018 season, though, was the Ryan Fitzmagic start to the season, and you know they were throwing the ball like crazy and playing very well. So, again, the challenging part for Casey Concepcion and Denzel Boston is elevating beyond the offense. But conversely, if they're both good players and Fannin's a good player and Judkins is a good player, the offense could just be better than people think.
Yeah. Like if I'm searching it that year, okay, no, it was a down year efficiency wise, but we still saw over 500 pass attempts, despite what I would describe as a less than ideal offensive situation that year.
Yeah, it was kind of a train wreck in terms of what happened that season, because the Browns were all drafted to be very highly decorated fantasy assets, the Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry year.
Yeah, and even still, we saw obviously those guys were more proven at the time, but two receivers have over 130 targets on that team.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, and again, and when you look at the consensus ADP of, you know, Sleeper and ESPN and whatnot, like, again, Sleeper and Yahoo and these like these platforms, you're going to get Casey Concepcion for free. And he's, you know, a lot higher of a pick on Underdog than he is on those platforms. And Denzel Boston, again, this is a late round dart throw. Like you're not even worried if you miss on this pick or whatever the case is. So let's keep it rolling here. We have Kenyon Sadiq, who is a player that I think I've drafted on like 20% of my best ball teams so far. Part of it, I will say, is the inherent nature of best ball mania, where
three tight end builds, you got one with upside in the middle of it.
Exactly. And not to mention too, back weighted production is really important. Week 17 is all that matters reasonably for all the money. So if Kenyon Sadiq is Colston Loveland from last year, that's an obvious smash pick at pick 161. However, from a redraft standpoint, I would say he's probably a little bit worse of a pick just because in redraft, if you draft Kenyon Sadiq, is he going to be on the waiver wire by week three? I think it's possible because if he's not getting the snaps right away, if Mason Taylor is a bigger threat to his overall opportunity, then maybe people are dropping and cutting bait with him. That being said, though, when you and I watched and graded Kenyon Sadiq, we saw like a legitimate kind of David Njoku, Delanie Walker like player.
All pro upside.
And literally all pro type of upside. Like human beings that, you know, 6 foot five, 245 pounds just simply don't move like this. There's a reason that nobody's run in the 4.3 since, you know, Vernon Davis or whatever it was, the last person to run that fast at that size. So sometimes Kenyon Sadiq is just, you know, the good Lord only makes a certain amount of freaks like this every once in a while.
Yeah. And even though there's a ton of players that could work into the target hierarchy, like obviously they pick Omar Cooper Jr. as well in the first round. They have a guy in A.D. Mitchell who's getting buzzed out of camp. Breece Hall, we know, is going to command targets out of the backfield. Outside of just saying, okay, Garrett Wilson's the true one in this offense, I think any one of those guys can emerge as the two. And if it is Kenyon Sadiq and you're getting a top 20 drafted capital tight end with that athleticism profile, with, like you said, the preface being the elite late season upside, like what if he's a 7 target per game in the money weeks?
Yeah, exactly. And I think Kenyon Sadiq, the prospect profile, like Loveland, obviously depressed by the fact he didn't test, but we're talking about, you know, Sadiq with a little bit more production and not multiple, you know, NFL drafted tight ends around him on his depth chart in college, not to mention the receivers that they had and Tez Johnson and those types of guys, DeCorian Moore, the talented freshman. Like Jamari Johnson's a top 3 tight end in next year's class. Terrence Ferguson,
number
second
one
round pick. In a quick reminder that today's video podcast is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Underdog is the best place to play this best ball summer. All you do is draft. There's no waivers, there's no trades, no in-season management. You just draft your teams, get refined for your home redraft leagues, and collect your winnings at the end of the year. $2 million and $15 million in total prizes to the first place winner of Best Ball Mania 7. Definitely something we are max entering. We are very excited to get refined for our own home leagues, and we want you to join us using our promo code FSE at sign up and first deposit on Underdog and first play on Underdog. We'll get you our redraft rankings manifesto, our draft guide, and our dynasty draft guide for free. That's it. All you have to do is sign up, make a play on the site, and you will get both of our draft guides and our weekly rankings in season to help you with your start sit decisions for free. Check that out if you guys are interested. Head to Underdog Fantasy and use the promo code FSE at sign up and first deposit. 2024. Like Kenyon Sadiq being able to produce and have a solid production profile is credit to him that a lot of people don't give him credit for because they want to look at the bottom line of what his production actually was. And again, when you look at the home league type of site ADP of Kenyon Sadiq, this guy's just friggin' buried, man. Like we're talking pick 143 on ESPN, 149 on Yahoo. Like you're not spending a consequential pick on him at all. He's actually even lower on Underdog. I guess the threat of the zero is maybe why people are not taking him as much on Underdog, but I don't know. For me, it's just like you said, when you're building a 3 tight end build on Underdog or even a 2 tight end build, you draft a Colston Loveland, you take a Kenyon Sadiq. You draft a Jake Ferguson, Kenyon Sadiq, and Kate Otten 3 stack, and you have your tight end bases covered upside and floor. In redraft, again, we always talk about this too. Let's say I took Tyler Warren or I took Sam Laporta or Kyle Pitts or Harold Fannin as my main tight end. Tacking on a Kenyon Sadiq for either a trade chip later, see what happens, see what he turns into, late round upside stash, like those are worthwhile swings in redraft, best ball, and any other format alike.
I mean, I basically played it like that in the Flock League last year. Like if Loveland was more productive earlier in the season, I probably could have sold high on Tucker Kraft. If Loveland, instead of week 8, when he became like really, really relevant down the stretch, instead, if that was like week 5, I probably would have had a sell window to sell Tucker Kraft as the tight end 3 in value. Like that's just how it is. Obviously, it didn't really work out well in terms of timing because Kraft got hurt as Loveland kind of identified as that big time, you know, spike down the stretch guy. But if it happened where like there was a little bit more overlap and I had 3 weeks to make a deal, I bet you I would have tacked on Tucker Kraft plus a receiver, went for an upgrade at receiver. Tucker Kraft plus a running back, went for an upgrade at running back. Like you're right. If you can hold a guy like Kenyon Sadiq through the first 4 weeks, because again, week five, at that point, if he hasn't established himself, of course, you can just cycle down the stretch. Maybe at that point, Jonah Coleman's popping up and you drop Sadiq for Coleman. But giving yourself a kind of a threshold, kind of a timeline to see if he does get those snaps opens you up to potential opportunities to make consolidation deals.
Yeah. And speaking of Jonah Coleman, I believe my second highest drafted running back, a rookie running back, aside from the one that we're going to talk about at number nine here. Jonah Coleman is just an arbitrage bet against RJ Harvey and JK Dobbins, realistically. Like, I think everybody should have a stance on the Broncos backfield. It's too valuable of a backfield to not have a stance on, because Sean Payton's running back one, or starting running back, or whole backfield combined, has been one of the more productive for fantasy football over the last decade, decade and a half. So if Jonah Coleman is the prospect that you and I thought he was, which made him a top two running back for both of us in the class, comp to Javonte Williams, Doug Martin, Mark Ingram, those types of players, he can win this backfield behind a, let's call it, weakened talent of RJ Harvey. We don't really believe in the player. We thought he was overdrafted. We didn't really love the, you know, rush yards over expected type of metrics last season. And then JK Dobbins, who's good when healthy, but is always dealing with something.
Yeah. And people are going to throw this around. We actually had a video last year. We'll talk about it for doing it again, but like this year's version of like somebody that's popped in the past, everybody's going to throw around who's this year's Cam Scottaboo. And I mean, it's low hanging fruit, obviously, given the size profile, given the overall three down profile in terms of production, given that they both went in the fourth round. Like, there are a lot of commonalities between what Cam Scottaboo was last year versus what Jonah Coleman is this year. But also just look at the team. They need a true three down skill set with size, with toughness to play in that Mark Ingram role. And I do think Sean Payton sees Jonah Coleman in training camp and he's, you know, looking thick and breaking tackles and, you know, plugging guys up in pass pro. Like, you don't think Sean Payton's going to trust this guy, especially looking last year, how volatile J.K. Dobbins' health was, how bad R.J. Harvey was between the tackles. R.J. Harvey's got a really nice receiving skill set. He can't stick up and protect Bo Nix in the passing game. If he can't make the right decisions between the tackles, Jonah Coleman will eat into his playing time.
Yeah. Also, again, Jonah Coleman's like ADP of these like platforms being like, I don't know what the hell ESPN's doing at 867.
867?
Like, I mean, ESPN just might not have updates with all these rookies, but even like the 170s, the 150s, the 170, like 160s, 152, whatever. Again, in redraft, what's the penalty, Danny, for me missing on my 13th round redraft
pick? Zero.
Exactly. Zero. None. Especially in a ESPN league where it's a start 7-1 flex, two running back, two wide receiver, half PPR, full PPR league. Like, this is the backfield that you take the swing on. This is, if it works out, this year's Cam Scottaboo, like you made reference to, because you can get a guy who has a three down skill set, who can play on, you know, third down, catch the football, play in pass protection, as we've seen. And again, from an underdog standpoint, this is also an excellent CLV play, as you kind of made reference to with Carnell Tate. 155.7 ADP. If we hear a lot of Jonah Coleman buzz in training camp, that number is going to be 115, 120 guaranteed. So for me, I'm just betting on the ability of the player that I saw 4 years at Arizona State and Washington combined, because he was a very, very undervalued prospect and only fell to the fourth round because he doesn't have elite speed.
Dude, before the NFL draft, because obviously once he fell to the fourth round, this is why he fell so far, because people are like, oh, well, RJ Harvey was okay and J.K. Dobbins was good before he got hurt. Before the NFL draft, he was being drafted between pick 90 to 100 on the big board. So, like, the market is willing to put him up there. I just feel like the ambiguity in the market not being able to predict how the training camp's going to unfold, how that depth chart's going to end up looking, it's what's depressing his cost right now. But when I see J.K. Dobbins and I see R.J. Harvey, I don't really see an obstacle towards Jonah Coleman becoming the RB1 if he's the prospect we both thought he was.
Yeah, exactly. That's the bet, is that he's a good enough prospect to beat out J.K. Dobbins, even when healthy or when injured, and R.J. Harvey, especially on early down stuff. And I do think with Dobbins being on a one-year deal, with Harvey being kind of, they've already shown what they think of Harvey by drafting Coleman and bringing back Dobbins. So I think that the gates are open for Jonah Coleman to take the job if he can. And I do think he can. Speaking of the gates being open to take a job, you got Ka'Tron Allen, very similar thesis. We just don't really believe in the other backs in the backfield. Now, Rashad White to me is the best back in this backfield, but I don't know that for sure. I don't know with certainty that he's going to be the best running back in this backfield. This is, again, very similar to what I just said about Denver. You should have a stance on this backfield, especially in a best ball draft. Leaving with one Washington Commanders running back, might be a very viable strategy, whether it's Bill or Rashad White or Catron or even Jerome Ford in the 18th round. Like, I think that somebody from this backfield is going to have relevant weeks throughout the season. And Catron Allen, you know, had more total yards and touchdowns than Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt had in a six-year college career in the last two seasons while sharing a backfield with Nick Singleton.
Why can't he just take on the Chris Rodriguez role down the stretch that we saw? Like, obviously, I believe in Rashad White too, especially as a receiving back, you know, a third down back, obviously the trustworthy pass pro. Maybe he can be a 4 to 6 target per game player. I am drafting a good bit of Rashad White, but I don't believe in Bill Kroski-Merritt. And when I see Catron Allen, very similar to what I think between RJ Harvey and Jonah Coleman, I would rather just take the, you know, coach's pet, the guy that can be trusted on all three down situations, a guy that's tough between the tackles. And who knows, man, this, like you said, with this offense, it could be one of the most valuable in the league. What if David Blau is just like the next Clint Kubiak?
Yeah, he could be. And especially, I think just from a stylistic standpoint, when you have a mobile quarterback, the way that, you know, Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry operate, having a hammer with a mobile quarterback does often work very well. And Catron Allen is the best hammer in this backfield. Like, he's the most physical, the toughest. Like, he can definitely be that guy.
Alfred Morris.
Yeah, exactly. You got your Alfred Morris. Alfred Morris was a fifth round pick?
Sixth round, what? Florida International? Florida,
yeah.
Atlantic? Like, one of them?
Also, like, Catron, again, if he went to the combine and ran a 4.47 or something, he would have been a second or third round pick with the season that he had this year at Penn State.
He probably wouldn't have run that fast, but still.
No, yeah, but like, let's say he did, and that he squashed that concern. That was one of his only concerns, was speed.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. I'm 17th, 18th round. I'm not taking Bill. Obviously, I'm taking Rashad White as well. But if I don't get Rashad White in a draft, I would much rather just wait 5, 6, 7 rounds after where Bill's going and take the upside shot that is Catron Allen.
Yeah, this next guy that we're going to talk about, I don't really agree with you, if I'm being completely honest. I don't really like this guy from a redraft standpoint. I think he's more of a dynasty
best
play.
Ball-y.
Yeah, best ball. I think, let's talk about Jeremy Bernard, because I will say one thing in favor of Jeremy Bernard is the type of player he is pro ready. I do think he can be on the field right away because he beats zone coverage at a high level. He can do things that NFL receivers do.
Yeah, and when I look at Jeremy Bernard, given his cost, I mean, what is that ADP? Let me just take a look. 185.5, you're taking him in the 16th, 17th round. And the way I look at it is I do trust the offensive system, especially in regards to what we've known from the Steelers in the past. Obviously, Mike Tomlin, defensive identity, Arthur Smith, football terrorism last year. I kind of made that case actually when I was talking with Ron and Sammy these last couple of videos. But with Mike McCarthy, you do have a proven track record of a coach that has had successful offenses. Obviously, we're all going to have our opinions on Mike McCarthy, but we can't argue with the data here. 13 of 18 years with a 60%+ team pass rate, 4 to 5 years in his Dallas tenure. And on top of that, 9 out of 13 seasons being a top 10 scoring offense with both Green Bay and with Dallas. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, well, that means the Steelers are going to be a top 10 scoring offense. That's not the argument I'm making. I'm more so just pointing on the fact that Mike McCarthy is modern in terms of his pass rate, is a coach that wants to throw the football, and at the very minimum provides a floor in terms of what the Steelers offense could be this upcoming year. On top of that, historically very, very strong in terms of his 11 personnel reliance. And when I look at this overall receiving depth chart, DK Metcalf, he's going to be your vertical X wide receiver. I do think Pittman's going to be that intermediate, you know, 7 to 9 target per game type of player, but it is 11 personnel. Jeremy Bernard has the opportunity to beat out a Roman Wilson, to beat out the other people on the depth chart and earn immediate playing time. So just from that fact alone, having a guy that's not going to get a zero in terms of snaps in best ball at that cost is already going to be a plus for me.
In a managed redraft league, he would need a Pittman or Metcalf injury to be really, you know, a huge waiver ad kind of player. I think those two guys are good established receivers already, to the point that Jeremy Bernard is not going to outproduce them when healthy. That's why I like him more for dynasty than I do for redraft, because Pittman, they just traded for him. Metcalf's on a contract that'll be expiring soon. But yeah, best ball, I think he's definitely more appealing in that format.
Well, that's what I was going to get into next, because even though Michael Pittman's the more proven option, and I do like Michael Pittman over Jeremy Bernard, that's not the argument I'm making. At the same time, it was very cheap for them to acquire Pittman. Pittman has been a player that has been hurt in the past these last couple of years, has played through injuries. Is it all that possible to say that a second-round rookie pick can't beat him out by week 8 or week 9? Like, I don't think that's out of the range of outcomes here. And the fact that you're getting him at 185, with that just solely priced in, he should be 20 picks higher in ADP.
Yeah, I mean, in consensus ADP, he's actually sandwiched between two other rookies in Zachariah Branch and Chris Bell.
Why?
Frankly, I think that the on the field immediate opportunity is better for those two guys. Like, assuming Chris Bell is healthy, he has an opportunity to start. You think so, eh?
Chris Bell is dealing with a torn ACL, and I thought he was a prospect that needed time to develop.
There's no Metcalf or Pittman on his team, though.
Sure, but I think the opportunity to be an immediate wide receiver three in an offense that's going to probably run 60%+ of their snaps out of 11 personnel has its own value.
Yeah, it does. You're right. And Zachariah Branch, assuming he can take, like, Branch, Rondale the Moore? Reason I hold out hope for Branch sometimes is because Branch, if he can put it all together in one NFL training camp the way Bucky Irving did, he could actually be a really good player. He could be Zay Flowers right away. It's just that he needs to learn a lot about route running to do that.
So let me ask you this question. If I had to ask you, who's going to be throwing more pass attempts next year, the Pittsburgh Steelers or the Atlanta Falcons? Who would you say?
Oh, the Pittsburgh Steelers by far, but there is no Metcalf or Pittman on the Atlanta Falcons. There's one Drake
there's a Pitts
London
and a London.
Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, there's a Pitts and a London, which I would argue is way more target competition.
Yeah, I totally fair. Totally fair.
Jeremy Bernard, he's underrated.
Yeah, the player that we have here is like, if he's a Romeo Doubs-like hit as a rookie, that's a very profitable 16th or 15th round best ball pick where he's currently going. So let's pivot into the running back position. I mentioned to this player being my highest drafted running back so far, and that's Nicholas Singleton. It looks kind of suboptimal at the moment that he's pick 209 in ADP, and I drafted a lot of him at pick 175, 180, where he was going at the time. But I don't really believe in Tajay Spears' ability to stay healthy. Like, coming out of Tulane, they talked about Tajay Spears having a lot of medical red flags, and then also he hasn't stayed healthy in the NFL. I think Nick Singleton right away can compete for the third down back on this team right from the beginning of the season, assuming he's doing well in training camp, which he should be because he's big and fast, and those are the types of players that get buzz in training camp. But Tony Pollard himself being an older player, a player that's 29, who's had 1,000 yards rushing in back-to-back-to-back-to-back seasons, if I'm not mistaken, four seasons in a row, Nick Singleton is going to have a hard time beating him out when healthy, but you're getting at the very least kind of like a contingent play right away in the 20th round, 18th round, 19th round, wherever you're taking him. But you also then have the upside that he can just be big, fast, and great on third down and get himself on the field right away by being really good.
That's really just the nuts and bolts. Do you believe in the heuristics of a rookie running back with the size, with the speed, with the receiving profile, in an ambiguous backfield? Pollard's going to be the early season grinder. Tajay Spears has kind of shown that he can't be a full-fledged three-down back. He's more of a complimentary back. And I do believe in Cam Ward, and I do believe in Brian Daboll. So when I look at Nick Singleton, again, do I think he's all there mentally at this point? No. Do I think he's going to need at least a training camp, probably at least a half a year to fully get up to NFL speeds? Probably. But when you're in the 17th round, the 18th round, yeah, you might be worried that you're taking a zero, but at the same time, you probably viewed Kyren as a zero. You probably viewed Puka as a zero. You probably viewed all those guys as a zero when they were coming out. At the end of the day, just fucking swing. Just
redraft, forget about it. He's going to be every 15th round pick that I make reasonably.
Yeah, exactly. And redraft, you can drop him.
To take him. Him and Katron Allen are going to be my 14th and 15th round pick in probably every single draft that I do.
Block league spoiler.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason for that, too, is I brought this up before. Brian Daboll, in back-to-back seasons, has started a day three running back who's now his offensive coordinator.
Good point.
Cam Scadabu, Tyrone Tracy, in back-to-back seasons, the incumbent starter of, you know, your Devin Singletary or Tracy last year has been replaced by a day three rookie who outperformed him in camp and in the preseason.
And also, we're acting like Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears are the model of staying healthy?
No. I mean, Pollard has been the last, you know, couple of years that he's been in Tennessee.
Also broke Spears his leg in half of Dallas.
Like, Spears in his career has never stayed on the field.
And it feels ironic we're talking about a guy who literally is injured as we're currently speaking, but like, it just kind of goes to show you, like, this backfield is gross at the top. Tony Pollard, we're drafting him just because he profiles into the workload. What if that workload were to go away by the midpoint of the year? Obviously,
which dead zone running backs often inexplicably lose their workload, which yeah. Pollard, if this was 2018, he would be a third or fourth round pick because he's a dead zone running back. But we get him in round seven because people have learned not to just push volume projections up the board.
Yeah. And obviously, like, I'm not saying Tony Pollard's a bad click. I actually think in round seven, if you need just strict early points, he's a fine click. But late season upside, Nick Singleton last round, give me it.
Yeah, give me it all day. And the last two guys that we're going to talk about here is these two Baltimore Ravens rookie wide receivers. Jacoby Lane was the third round pick of the two. He was the one drafted first. He's going to profile more to be your X receiver, I would imagine. He's going to probably, if I had to guess, need to beat out Rashad Bateman right away, because I think Bateman is kind of the current pseudo X receiver on the team. But Jacoby Lane, you know, 12 receiving touchdowns his sophomore season on the same field as Mekhi Lemon, Zachariah Branch, Deuce Robinson, Woody Marks. Like he's used to producing alongside target competition, a certified my guy, as you guys might recall during the dynasty offseason for me. I comped him to like the Allens of the Jacksonville Jaguars 2010s, which, you know, Allen Hurns, Allen Robinson, kind of the range of outcomes. I think that he has that type of upside. He's also a very funny person, so I'm hoping that he's not Keon Coleman 2.0. Oh, God. But the other guy that I think really fits the description for like true ball knowers will know that this is a player and an archetype of a player that can get on the field right away. I'm literally searching for him because I find him anywhere.
Yeah, and he's talking about Elijah Serrat. Also, it's funny you mentioned that thing with Jacoby Lane. On that prospect sheet, I literally had Baltimore as one of his better fits because they did need this type of archetype of receiver because Bateman's more of your separator type. Zay Flowers, obviously more of your separator type. Just getting a guy that when you're inside the 20-yard line can contribute with touchdowns. I mean, even if he's not a huge smash, can't he just be this year's Isaac Tesla?
Yeah, and again, from a redraft angle, which is the point of this video, yeah. I think he also has like the contingent upside. If Lamar really has one of those Lamar-type seasons where he's throwing 36 touchdowns, could Jacoby Lane catch 9 touchdowns this year? Because Mark Andrews is not the same Mark Andrews he used to be. And Mark Andrews has always been like the go-to guy in the red zone for the Ravens. And as I've talked about on numerous occasions, Declan Doyle is going to do things differently than the way that John Harbaugh and Todd Monken are going to do them. And I do think it's possible that the Ravens actually throw 550 times this season instead of 450 times like they usually do.
Wait, so what you're saying is with Declan Doyle coming over, this is just Elijah Sarr Brown?
Pretty much, yeah. And yeah, Surratt, the reason I think that he can get on the field right away and produce is Declan Doyle, the Bears kind of coaching tree, they are more of an 11 personnel coaching tree. And I think it's the reason that you could put the breadcrumbs together to say that this is going to be a heavy 11 personnel team is the fact that they drafted two receivers in the third and fourth round, and they let their second tight end and third tight end walk in Charlie Kolar in Isaiah Likely. If they were going to operate the same type of 450 pass attempt, hammer it downhill with Derrick Henry, throw the ball like crazy to the tight ends in the red zone, don't you think they would have retained Isaiah Likely or Charlie Kolar or both instead of letting both walk and replacing them with two receivers?
Who was your comp for Elijah's or for Amon-Ra St. Brown? Do you remember?
It was Tyler Boyd.
And who was my comp for Elijah Surratt?
Tyler Boyd. If Elijah Surratt has a St. Brown like rookie season, I will be insufferable because I've been saying it for months that he could
be rich.
Have that kind of season. And yeah, I will be because I have a lot of shares of the guy. But those are the players that we think your kind of buffoon league mates are overlooking, rookies in redraft. Now, again, there's some dynasty implication to this video. If you heard an argument here and you're like, I want to go trade for that guy in dynasty, I think he has a good chance to get on the field right away and produce. It's going to influence dynasty rankings if Elijah Surratt has a great rookie season, obviously. So definitely be sure to check out everything we're doing over on the site, whether it's redraft rankings, like you heard some stuff for today in today's video, whether it's dynasty stuff. The season pass for those of you guys that are, getting into your redraft, you're coming back to the scene, training camp's opening up soon. You want to get into our redraft rankings, use the tools that we showcase today. The consensus ADP platform is available with the season pass, the draft sheets that we're going to have available for you guys. Let me actually just quickly show that off because we haven't really talked about it on our channel yet. The draft sheets are going to basically give you guys personalized advice for your league settings. So on the back end, Danny and I are going to set up our draft rankings to be somewhat chameleon-like so that they can be adjusted on the back end for three wide receiver start formats, for start sevens, for tight end premium, for half PPR, for standard, for ESPN formats, for sleeper formats, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a new feature of the site as well. So if you guys are interested in any of that, go check it out. Again, if you want access to our Dynasty Draft Guide, Rookie Draft Guide, and also our redraft rankings manifesto and projections, you can sign up over on Underdog Fantasy, use our promo code FSE, play 5, get 50. And of course, if you already have an Underdog account, you can get access to all that on the site as well. So like, comment, subscribe if you guys enjoyed. Peace out. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for making it all the way to the end of the Fantasy Stock Exchange show. A reminder, all of you guys right now can get all of our bonus content, rankings, draft guides, and everything in between over on flockfantasy.com. Use the promo code FSE when you sign up for a 7-day free trial, 30% off any of the packages, and a free Dynasty Decisions 2.0 team breakdown for every annual mother flocker. Appreciate you, and check it out.